Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. Love is generosity. But just how much of yourself, your physical flesh and blood, would you give to the person you love? Here's comedian Sarah Silverman reading Angela Balsita's Modern Love essay, Beneath the Modest Alter Ego, I See My Superhero.
I was just 17, a typical college freshman concerned primarily with exploring my newfound freedom, my drinking skills, and the boys in the dorm next door. When one day I came home from sociology class with swollen ankles. "Oh my God," my roommate said, "you're pregnant." "That's not it," I assured her. When I called my mother, she scolded me. "It's because you're drinking too much." But when she told my father, who's a physician, about my condition, he grabbed the phone and said, "Come home." He took me to the hospital where specialists explained to me that I had a kidney disease called glomerulonephritis. I would have to start dialysis, a 3-hour, 3-days-a-week treatment to clean the waste out of my blood. Sitting up in my paper-thin hospital gown, I said, "You know, this really is not a good time." I tried to stick it out for the rest of the semester, dealing with dialysis while trying to maintain the life of an average Loyola college freshman. But the treatments exhausted me, and eventually I had to drop out. I moved back home to Pennsylvania, where I sat in my childhood bedroom for the rest of the school year, contemplating what the doctors said could be an alternative to dialysis, a kidney transplant. Luckily, I had an older brother who was sweet and selfless and, most important, healthy. "The surgery is usually harder on the donor," the surgeon told him. "I'm not worried," my brother said. It was not a surprise that his genes matched mine, but it was lucky that the surgery was easy without complications. He recovered more quickly than expected, and the transplant appeared to be a success. Within months, I was back at school and on track to graduate on schedule. And it was during this time at a college lawn party that I met Christopher. Sitting in a t-shirt wearing a pair of gold Elvis sunglasses, he looked my direction and said, "Are you lonesome tonight, little lady?" As cheesy as his line was, I have to admit, I was hooked. One night as we sat in a crowded bar, I warned him about my kidney disease. I put every oddity and ailment of mine out there. "I have 3 kidneys, I said.
"So what? I have a Spock ear."
"I take like 9 medications every morning," I confessed.
"I get sunburned through skylights."
"I have a big nasty scar that goes from the side of my belly all the way down to below my bikini line."
"I have to see it," he said, leaning across the table and then giving me a wink.
My frank admissions didn't cause him to get up and leave, as often happened with other boys. He stayed and ordered another drink. And he continued to stay, through years of medication changes, doctor appointments, and lab tests. He stayed as we sorted through all those life-changing decisions. Where are we going to move next? What will we do for work? And he stayed even when, years later, I began to reject my brother's kidney. Christopher watched as my young body quickly turned into that of an old woman. First with the reappearance of the swollen ankles, then with nausea and back pains, and finally with a limp in my step from the gout. I went back on dialysis, convinced that my luck had run out. I would need another new kidney, but from whom? Christopher committed to the transplant before we knew he was even a viable donor. He came into our kitchen and said, "I'll give you mine." The best part, I didn't even have to ask, but he had a few tough stipulations.
"You have to watch your diet."
I nodded enthusiastically. "Whatever you say." Under the table, my legs were shaking.
"No more drinking. I'm talking like a glass of wine at dinner, maybe. And no more smoking your occasional cigarettes."
"Okay," I said.
"If I give you my kidney, you've got to keep it. Be good to it."
I understood his concern. My record up to that point had not been the cleanest. When I went back to school after receiving my brother's kidney, I wanted to pick up right where I left off, trying to feel normal again among my peers. I partied to excess. I stayed out too late and exhausted myself on the weekends. I didn't think about what a life like that would eventually do to my already compromised state of health. "I promise," I said, but at that point I would have agreed to anything. We shook on our deal before he dipped me, a stare style, and planted his warm lips on mine. For weeks, the transplant team poked and prodded Christopher with blood tests, x-rays, and MRIs, assessing his viability. But I knew he'd be a match. I knew it from the way we finished each other's sentences and said the punchlines to each other's jokes. I knew it from the way he steadied me on hikes as I wobbled awkwardly on precarious boulders. And I was right. "Well, he's good enough," said the nurse when we met to hear the result. I watched her lips move as she gave us the details of the operation, but all I could think about was how love had saved me. When the transplant was over, my kidney function was restored, and I felt healthier than I had in a long time. But Christopher did not escape as cleanly. A few days after, his incision became infected. He began to feel weak. He lost his appetite. The doctors put him on bed rest for 6 weeks to allow the wound to heal. Though I finally felt better again, it was painful to watch this normally active guy stuck in a bed staring at the wall day after day and to know that he was there because of me. When my mother tells people at supermarkets about Christopher and me, they begin to cry. When he and I go out to dinner with other couples, I make them swoon with our love story. "He saved my life," I tell them.
"No, I didn't," Christopher says, smirking with annoyance.
But it was true despite his modesty. Then one weekend in November, just 3 months after the transplant, I woke up with a blinding headache that would not go away. Later, it spread into severe back pain and an astronomical fever. "This is not happening," I thought, as they wheeled me from the emergency room to the ward. I would end up staying for 3 weeks as doctors examined my condition and watched my kidney function fluctuate. Every night as I prayed in my hospital bed that I would not lose this kidney, Christopher sat nearby reading a book or looking out for soccer scores on the wall-mounted TV. What would it mean if I were to reject his kidney, I wondered. What if he can't rescue me after all? In the end, my symptoms turned out to be a result of an infection, not of outright rejection. And while there was no major damage to the kidney, the illness did serious damage to the one thing that up until then I had been sure of, that love would save me. As someone who's been sick for the last 15 years, I'm always looking for the cure. I wait for the hero to swoop in and save the girl. The more romantic in my mind, the better. Christopher's version of our fairy tale has always been a bit different from mine, a little more pragmatic. When I say, marriage, what do we need marriage for? The fact that you gave me your kidney should show the world that we're destined to be together. And he says,
well, maybe we should get married so my health benefits can pay for your lab tests and maintenance drugs.
When I would say, what if I lose this kidney? He says, his voice calm and cool,
then I'll drive you to dialysis until you get a new one.
Chances are that is the position we will find ourselves in one day, and he seems to know it. He knows that even if I watch my salt, am tender with his kidney, and try in earnest to keep it with me, someday my body will discover that his kidney is foreign and strange and will try to get rid of it. Christopher is my match in terms of blood and tissue, along with being my match in almost every other conceivable way. And yet, in the end, even this may not be enough to deliver me from the pain and effects of my affliction. He may not be able to save my life, but in so many ways, he already has.
Sarah Silverman, reading Angela Balsita's essay, Beneath the Modest Alter Ego, I See My Superhero. Well, it's been 10 years since Angela's piece was published. Is Chris driving her to dialysis? Be sure you've got plenty of tissues at hand, because we'll hear how Angela and her superhero are doing today after the break. We're back. It's Modern Love, the podcast. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with plenty of tissues in hand. Because now, a postscript from the author of this week's essay, Angela Balsita.
So after the piece, Chris and I got married. And shortly after it was published, we had our daughter, Nico. And it was kind of a risk when we had her, because we knew that Chris's kidney was functioning quite well, and we were on this nice, healthy road. So we got pregnant, and she was born early, but she was healthy. The pregnancy was a lot on the kidney, and the kidney wasn't able to recover. So shortly after she was born, I lost Chris's kidney. So the piece is interesting to me because it was very much about me being very hopeful that this kidney was going to last us forever and our love was going to pull us through.
My name is Christopher Doyle, and I'm Angela's husband. When Angela's kidney, the one I donated, gave out, I was really disappointed in my kidney. I thought it could have been much hardier. Obviously, it did bring our daughter into the world, so I guess it kind of has a saving grace, and if it had to go out, it went out with a bang.
They had a beautiful baby girl, but losing Chris's kidney meant that Angela had to spend the first year of her daughter's life on dialysis.
It was not what I expected motherhood to be like at all. Being sick while she was getting stronger and stronger every day. But since then, Nico, our daughter, she's almost 8, she's healthy, and after my third transplant, I am also healthy and strong. A friend decided to donate her kidney to me. She had been with us through this whole time and knew that I was in trouble and needed help, and the rest is smooth sailing in history, hopefully.
Angela and Chris will celebrate their 10th anniversary later this year. They live in Baltimore, where Angela's a high school English teacher.
My life today is so normal and so boring, and I love it. I love how boring it is. I love that I don't have to worry about the next event that's going to happen to my body, right? Or worry about the next trauma that we have to deal with. I love that I can teach writing and talk about writing all day, that I get to take care of my kid. That's, I think, something some of us might take for granted. But I get to take care of her, right, instead of other people taking care of me. I have 5 kidneys in my body, They don't take them out. They just keep them in there. I don't know. I kind of like the idea of having them all in there. I have my brother, my husband, and my dear friends all in my body, like quite literally, right? And that's pretty beautiful.
Angela Balsita, author of this week's essay. We also heard from her husband, Christopher Doyle. Angela shares more of their story in her 2011 memoir, Moonface. And now, Modern Love editor Daniel Jones shares what he took away from Angela's story.
I like what she says in this essay about how she kept trying to read a greater meaning or sense of fate into this decision by her boyfriend to give her a kidney. And I like how she gets beyond that and thinks, okay, well, love isn't the thing that's saving me. A healthy kidney is saving me. And it was a loving act that brought that kidney to me and let me have it. But if the kidney fails, then it's the kidney that's letting me down, not the person, not love itself. When it gets right down to it, it's about real things and real people and failing organs. And I think we're better off if we stop thinking it was either meant to be this way or it was not meant to be this way.
Dan Jones, editor of Modern Love for the New York Times. And I really agree with Dan, because that seems to be the lightning bolt in so many of our modern love stories, that in life and in love, we are so fortunate simply to be. Special thanks to Sarah Silverman for reading Angela's essay. She recently starred in the film I Smile Back, and you can see her later this year in the movie Pop Star with Andy Samberg. You can also see her performing stand-up around the country this May and June. Next week on Modern Love, Cheryl Strayed, co-host of WBUR's Dear Sugar podcast and author of the best-selling memoir Wild. She brings us a story about taking a second chance on love.
I looked across the table at my date, an attractive brown-eyed man with two young children and a broken marriage, as he recounted his romantic history. I smiled and thought, I could be in a relationship with a man like this. In fact, I knew I could. I had married him.
Modern Love is a production of the New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It is produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, John Parati, and Amory Sievertson. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Our casting consultant is Amy Lippins. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for the New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM and the Go License Collection at ghostlysongs.com. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.